League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Texans training camp opens up on Friday. Cody Stutt's going to be out there, I've heard. I've heard he's going to have the bucket hat on. You think he's going to show off the guns?
What gun?
Cody, watch out.
I don't think they're allowed. They have Cody a security strong. Check. Oh, his arms?
Yes.
You oh, that's man. Right. Is he still doing that thing where he goes to that gym in Meyerland?
I think so. Okay. If you're going to be outside under the, like, I hope he's wearing sunscreen.
Well, he's General Junior, and General John McClane used to get out there with his floppy hat, and did he wear sleeves?
What's that?
The general, when he was out there covering practice.
It depended on the day.
He had the shades and the floppy hat. I don't remember if he had the guns undercover because of the sun and the evil rays of sunshine.
Yeah. Anyways, training camp is underway on Friday. Houston Texans open it up. They had the veterans report yesterday. So everybody's there. Everybody's over there at Kirby hanging out, ready to go. Lovie Smith, of course, will be entering his first year as the Houston Texans head coach. Second year with the organization, of course, with the defensive coordinator last year. And it is his fourth stint as a head coach, third in the NFL. Of course, how the Texans hired Lovie Smith to be their head coach is kind of curious, kind of a head scratcher, kind of interesting. Was never a candidate. Never a candidate to be your head coach. Brian Flores lawsuit. You had a Sunday supper with the gentleman. And all of a sudden, he's your head coach. Bada boom, bada bang. But as we look at Lovie Smith, because look, we agree that he's an upgrade over David Culley. How can you not be an upgrade over David Culley, who wore his headsets like this and chewed on his tongue and had Nick Caserio on his headset telling him what to do? Can Lovie Smith be the long-term guy, though, for the Houston Texans?
I think I need you to define long-term for me. I think for 3 years, yes. I think that for 5 years, it's possible. I think that a lot will be determined in terms of the working relationship between Nick Caserio and Lovie. I think already it's in a better position than it was when Nick was literally dominating and running and as a dictator doing everything with David Culley, maybe because he had to. But we've already seen and heard of Lovie being able to put his foot down and say, you're not going to talk on the headsets. You're not going to do some of the things that you were doing with Culley, because I'm here now and I have a competent staff and I know what I'm doing. So I think that as kind of the synergy is good right now, a lot will be determined by how it goes through the first season or two. If you can continue to keep it going in a positive direction and the team is making strides and we're seeing the young players develop and they're adding more young players to the mix. And as we talked about, using the opportunity to add some free agents, I think there's a legit chance for Lovie Smith to be here for 3 years and maybe more.
Yeah. Is 3 years long term, Brendan? Brendan's giving us.
That's
the,
what I said.
The
I mean,
handshake.
I think at four, I would say it long term.
In NFL coaching circles, sometimes 3 years is a pretty good run.
I would say that it is a decent run, and I would also say it would be my most popular answer. I think if you took a poll of Houston Texans fans, that 3 years would be the most popular answer on the tenure of Lovie Smith. Look, I don't think Nick Caserio values the head coach position all that much. I think he has shown us that by his two hires. Hired David Culley, hired Lovie Smith when no one else has been interviewing Lovie Smith as their head coach in a very long time. The list of candidates that he has interviewed every single time that a head coaching vacancy has been up, I don't think he values a head coach position all that much. He wants a head coach that will develop players, be a rah-rah guy, yeah, go get them, and basically don't be an idiot, get out of the way.
I disagree simply because of the fact that I think he thought that way until he hired David Culley. And once he saw David Culley and how having that mentality can completely throw your entire organization under the bus and get run over, I think he realized the second go-round that it helps to have someone that has some authority, that has some structure, that has the ability to be able to discipline his players and have some control. And so I agree with you in the Culley sense of it, but I think that it's changed a little bit in the fact that I don't think he even knew what he was signing up for when he signed Lovie. I think Lovie was just the easiest way to kind of get by this really,
which proves my point, though.
But once, what I'm getting at is once you did hire him and start talking to him about from a head coaching position.
They didn't talk to him for long.
I'm talking about once he was hired and they started talking about what we're going to do going forward from the staff to handling the roster to different workouts and things like that. I think that that Caserio realized this is a different guy than the guy that I just got done with.
And
this
no guy's got that.
like a more firm grasp on how much authority needs to be involved in the head coaching position.
But I think it's the bare minimum of an NFL head coach, that you have some authority and you make sure your professionals are doing the professional thing. Okay. Head coach does that.
See, because I think that here's the thing. That's why I said it's going to be the first year or two. Because I think as the season, you get into the season and you see the things that Lovey has already been through, that he knows how a well-oiled machine and what when a head coach is, and he knows what he wants to do as a head coach. And if there's pushback from Caserio, that's where I'm saying that synergy that they have now, that could go by the wayside very quickly. Because I think Lovey's a very no-nonsense guy in that regard. And unlike Cully, who you can just push over and just move on from and tell him what to do and he'll do it, I think Lovey's going to tell you where to go if Caserio tells him to do something he doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's just that simple of, sure, a little structure here, a little stuff there. I think he is a guy because of what he did with the Bears. And even though he didn't have success, he carried those same principles over to the Buccaneers. I think that he's a guy that's going to push back on Caserio like Cully wouldn't do.
No, I'm not trying to compare Lovie Smith to David Cully. And you're right. I think both things are true here. Because Lovie Smith is far more qualified as a head coach than David Cully. Lovie Smith's going to put his foot down with Nick Caserio, where David Cully's like, no, you're paying me all this money. You can fire me at the end of the year. I'll just go, sit on my mattress of cash. Which Lovie Smith's not going to do. He's a football dude. He has integrity and he has authority. All of those things. Like, it's a step up. There's no doubt about that. But also, how many teams have interviewed Lovie Smith to be their head coach in the last decade? No one. Look at any head coach ranking list. Where's Lovie Smith ranked? Bottom three in the entire NFL. So, Lovie Smith can be an upgrade, while Nick Caserio still does not value the head coaching position. And it's not only Lovie Smith of why I say this. Look at the list of candidates. The Texans were mocked and ridiculed for a few of the candidates, one especially that they were interviewing and very seriously wanted to give them the job if it wasn't for the Brian Flores thing. If Nick Caserio was an iota away from hiring Josh McCown, would you be saying that Nick Caserio cares about the head coaching position?
I would have a different opinion, but I would also have the opinion that this organization has no freaking idea what the hell they're doing. And I think that in a lot of regards, why Lovie Smith didn't get more interviews and things like that, too. The league has become so much about the good old boy network of who you know, who you trust, and who you've had relationships with in the past in terms of who you consider to be your head coach. And I think Lovie, and again, with his age, and he started to get long in the tooth, and he already had some experience, that retread kind of coaching thing became something where he started getting labeled as a guy that was a good coordinator that maybe wasn't the right guy to be a head coach. But I think that it was just he didn't get this job because he was top of anybody's list. But I think that because he fell into the right place at the right time, he got an opportunity. But I think that now that he got the opportunity and once the ink dried on the contract, he realized I'm still not going to change who I am. And like you said, from an integrity standpoint and the way I structure things and do things, I'm not going to change that because this guy wants to be Geppetto and wants me to be Pinocchio.
No, I mean, Lovie Smith isn't the puppet to Nick Caserio like we are to Brendan Riley. But I just feel like Nick Caserio thinks he's the figurehead of the organization and doesn't value head coach as much as others. Like, even Lovie Smith, again, an upgrade. I think he's probably better than what some people think he is around the NFL. He's not Andy Reid that's going to automatically have an elite offense. He's not Sean McVay who's going to have an elite offense. He's not Bill Belichick. And there's a reason that nobody else was interviewing him for a decade in the National Football League. It's not to say he's incompetent and he's a terrible head coach, because I don't agree. I don't believe that. As far as long-term, I think 3 years is the answer. So if long-term is 3 years, cool. If long-term is more than 3 years, then no, he's not going to be the long-term
guy. Now, let me ask you on that, though. Okay, so say we're about 3 years in, right? But the team's showing progress. We said in year three, they might be fighting for a playoff spot, a wild card, but they're showing immense progress from where they started with Lovie, right? Pep looks like he's got a good grasp on the offense. Whoever the quarterback is in the offense looks like it's progressing. The young players look like they've given you a relevant roster. Is there a reason to make that change after year three, or do you hang on to him a little longer and say, until there's conflict or a fallout or something that happens where we feel like he's lost the locker room, we can keep going with this a little longer?
I think he's going to ultimately retire on good terms. Like, it's kind of my prediction. Like, because he's a little bit older.
But is he kind of like Romeo, where he just can't know when to say when, and you're just going to keep hanging on?
Yeah, but Romeo didn't have to be the head coach, though,
true,
right? Like, I think you could look at a situation, which I actually hope they do this with Dusty Baker after the year, where it's like, look, we value you, we like you, we want you,
vice just president not as of the baseball head coach, or just special not as consult.
The, yeah, you're an assistant to the general manager. Throw whatever fancy label you want.
Romeo
throw
got
on.
A VP title to do whatever he wanted to do.
Like, he's 64 years old, and Lovie, like, 64 is not ancient, right? And Lovie Smith's in very good shape. I wish I looked like him now, much less whenever I'm 64
grow
years
the beard.
Old. I'm trying, as you can see. But, I mean, he's older for an NFL head coach. The NFL is going the opposite direction. So I just don't see Lovie Smith here for the next 3 years. That said, I don't think Lovie Smith's necessarily going to do things in the next 3 years that warrant him being fired, because I don't think that they look at Lovie Smith in the head coach position of this team to win tons of games right away. If Lovie goes 5-12 this season, 7-10 the following year, and 9-8 in that third season, like, they're going to feel pretty pleased with Lovie Smith.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to be in a position where we must move on. But I think they will, in the sense of, like, okay, let's get a little bit younger. Let's bring in a candidate that we like more. Hey, Lovie, why don't you be our VP of whatever?
Yeah, say you want a guy that's more innovative in terms of an offensive-minded coach that's going to have that kind of effect on the offense, but also a young, up-and-coming guy that you feel like can really energize the entire locker room, and you feel like that guy can take you a level that Lovie probably can't based on his age and kind of more being more old-school traditional football. I understand that that could happen, but I think that that's why I said it's so key to just how the relationship develops the first year, year and a half between him and Nick. If Nick likes him and trusts him, and we see those kind of things happen from a progression standpoint, I think he could be here a little longer.
Yeah.
But if he pushes back and Nick doesn't like it, because we know Nick likes his control, that at a certain point, if he rubs Nick the wrong way, I think 2 years and then you start realize the clock's ticking.
Nick likes his control, but I also feel like he's willing to have conversation with the countering opinion.
I think he respects Lovie because of his resume.
I don't view Nick Caserio as a my way or the highway type of guy. It's, okay, I'm the figurehead, I am the leader of this organization, but I'm going to listen to Lovie. I'm going to listen to dudes who have experience in this league. I might not agree with them, and I ultimately might not do what you tell me to do, but he's open to the suggestion.
My way or the highway was Cullen. I think he was definitely my way or the highway with Cullen.
I think so, too, because he didn't respect him.
Well, and he also knew he had to, right, at a certain point, because he saw he wasn't capable of handling it. But I think that he respects Lovie, his resume, his experiences. And when he came in, he already had his notions and plans and ideas to where you have to respect what he's been through and what he knows, to where I think they have a different relationship already. And that helps everyone in that locker room.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I believe we found the most positive assessment of Davis Mills. Is it good enough, though? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Lovie Smith, is he the long-term answer for the Houston Texans? Or one of our top 10 storylines entering the 2022 season as Texans camp opens up on Friday. The Dizzle says you don't want to fall into Marvin Lewis, Jeff Fisher category either after 3 years when talking about Lovie Smith. I imagine that means you're mediocre, but not great. See, that's kind of my hang-up on Lovie. Like, I don't think Lovie makes your team a whole lot better. Like, if you look at NFL head coaches, we were having this conversation pre-show today with Sales Guy Q. Like, Sean McVay makes his team better, right? His offensive brilliance, he made Matthew Stafford. He elevated Matthew Stafford, no matter what Brendan thinks of him. He elevated him. He made him a Super Bowl-winning quarterback when a lot of people didn't think he was that. He elevated Jared Goff. Jared Goff, who was he was good enough to get paid a lot of money, and now, you know, mediocre bottom 10 quarterback in the NFL, starting quarterback in the NFL. Andy Reid has elevated every quarterback he's ever been with. I think Bill Belichick has elevated his teams, although you can push back and say, well, he's had Tom Brady. There's certain defensive minds that elevate their team as well. Does Lovie Smith add a win or two to a football team compared to every other NFL head coach? I would say no. So if you get to a team that's now 9-8 level, they're a 10-win team. Now, like, how are you getting over the top? How are you getting over the hump? It might be, you know, a McVay type in 3 years' time.
It's Yeah, and I think, Jeremy, there's so many different ways than it used to be in terms of analyzing a head coach. Because you always, you know, and we still do this to some degree today, but when you're looking at, are they a defensive or offensive-minded coach? And then you assume that the majority of the offensive-minded coaches are either going to be involved in play calling or call the plays or do a lot to change and structure the offense, and vice versa on defense. Yep. But then if you're not one of those type guys, then you have to be an ultimate leader, a leader of men, and you have to have an element of control and management to where you hire guys you trust to be the coordinators. You understand they're going to do their job. They understand that at any time you can intervene or make a decision to either overrule or do what you want to do because you are still in control. And then how that also translates to how you're going to be the one dealing with the general manager, but you're going to have a say. Same thing with the owner. And then how that all translates. We've seen how Urban Meyer couldn't do either. We've seen and heard stories about just how out of control the locker room was, how he didn't even have any understanding of the coordinators that he hired. He couldn't get them to respect when he wanted to make a decision, and it was completely out of whack. But nowadays in the NFL, you're looking at it from a different perspective where these guys are going to come in and they're multifaceted. But you mentioned Goff. It's unbelievable when you think about it what they were able to do with Goff thanks to McVay. Because without McVay, Goff never gets a $100 million deal.
Yep.
And people figured him out. But the fact that he was able to do that with a guy like that just shows you what an unbelievable mind. Kyle Shanahan's the same way. I mean, their grasp and their level of offensive football is totally on a shelf above what your old traditional coaches would be. So you either got to trust and hire the right coordinators, have a good relationship with them, but be able to manage them really well, or you really have to have a firm grasp on either one side of the football or, you know, in a perfect world, both sides of the football, and know the personnel as well.
Like, if you're the best head coach in the NFL, how many wins are you gaining just because you're the best head coach in the NFL versus the league average? With the league average would have to be zero here. You're 15th, 16th, 17th best head coaches in the NFL, or you're zero, right?
Right.
So the best head coaches, how many more wins are they getting in the middle? And the worst head coach in the NFL, how many more losses are they getting in the middle? I think it's a six-game swing, honestly. I think 3 wins max for the best head coach in the NFL versus the middle. I think a 3-loss swing for the worst NFL head coach versus the middle. So if you're in a spot where you're the Texans, and let's just assume Lovie Smith is the middle, which I think might be a reach, if I'm being completely honest with you, he's a zero right now. He's not losing you games. He's not winning you games. So I think it's a fine and honest assessment about Lovie Smith. But if you're in a position where now you're a playoff team in 3 seasons, you can get someone that's closer to the top end where they're gaining a win or two. It's a move that you have to make.
See, it's different than baseball, where in baseball you say maybe in a 162-game schedule, a manager can be responsible for 1 or 2 wins.
Yeah.
In the NFL, I'm with you. I was thinking more along the lines of 2, 2.5. But
yeah,
two
I think it's in that window.
2 to 3 games, you can make a difference when, you know, because you're deciding whether it's offensively, you know, throwing the kitchen sink and blitzing at the right time, or making a key decision to go for it on offense at the right time, or the play call that you call in is innovative and the defense wasn't expecting it. But you can win games. And then, of course, your clock management and your challenges and all those other things. You can win a couple of games a year that way. On the other side of it, you can absolutely lose it.
We saw
David Culley give you the textbook on how to absolutely pee down your leg and lose games.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with that. And I think that's why I said, we're going to see where we're at in the first year and a half in terms of the relationship between Caserio and Lovie, and then how it translates to, are the young guys developing? Are you seeing progress? Are you seeing them in more games? Are you seeing, you know, the defense being able to stop people, the offense being able to move the football? And then at a certain point, just like we said, when you get to go into free agency and say, there's a couple guys I can add here that's going to make me better. Well, if there's a coach that can make me better too, that's at a certain point, you're going to have a tough decision.
Yeah, I think football coaches specifically, to me, have way more impact on the game than any other sport. To me, it's NFL by a mile. I think basketball certainly comes into play. I'd put college basketball higher on that list than the NBA. And then baseball is like a distant third. So like we obviously criticize Dusty Baker's decisions and things like that. Like his mistakes are not nearly as egregious of an NFL head coach making the mistakes, because you have way more at stake, way more rides on those decisions than in baseball. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So a very positive assessment, I believe, of Davis Mills from the national media. A lot of Mills Mafia members, a lot of Mills truthers. We challenged people, I think it was yesterday, right, Blank? Like, okay, you tell me, I think it was Monday, actually. You tell me, what is the ceiling for Davis Mills? Like, even if you're a Mills believer, you're Mills Mafia, you're a Mills truther, let us know. 713-780-ESPN. What is the most extreme upside potential for Davis Mills?
See, I'm just, and you know, you and I have had this conversation on air, off air, and
use
otherwise.
Use your imagination. Exaggerate if you want to. What's the best thing that you can believe in, maybe even in your dreams?
In my wildest dreams, if I was to say Davis Mills could be, he could be a top 12 quarterback in the NFL. I think that's as far as I'll go. I don't think I'm slamming him in any way, but I think I've seen enough that I know that there's still limitations. There's still things that don't put him on that upper echelon, top shelf of the top 5 to top 10. But I think that I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt enough to say, look, if he ends up being a top 12 type quarterback, a lot of teams would kill for that, and you'd be in a really good position. So if you want me to give you the absolute ceiling is the roof, then I would say top 12.
I think that's Derek Carr, right? Like whenever we put together our Killer Bees top 10 quarterbacks, Derek Carr was
tied for 10th. That means he's 11th.
He was tied for 10th on your list.
Yes.
But whenever we added all of the Bs together, he was just outside of the top 10. So whenever you say top 12, like that to me is Dave, is like what you're describing. Yeah. You're describing Derek Carr.
You're not as bad as Kirk Cousins, but you're not as good as the top echelon of quarterbacks.
He's flirting with the top 10. He's maybe just outside of it. And what I would push back with is that good enough? Like, you just told me in your wildest imaginations, Davis Mills could be Derek Carr, which, if we're being completely honest, for a third-round rookie you took out of Stanford that not many people knew about, that's a win. That's a great return on investment for a third-round quarterback. That's outstanding. But whenever you relate that to winning in the National Football League, when you relate that to winning a Super Bowl, is that good enough? Because the Raiders last year were they snuck into the playoffs. They kind of peaked under Derek Carr. I think it was Derek Carr's, second playoff appearance, I believe. They went out and got Davante Adams for him to try to elevate him as a quarterback because he can't do it on his own. There's a reason that Aaron Rodgers and Pat Mahomes had their best receivers traded away because their teams feel like those quarterbacks are going to help their receivers, whereas Tyreek Hill goes to Tua, Davante Adams goes to Derek Carr. I don't think that's a coincidence. So if Derek Carr is your quarterback because Davis Mills, in your wildest imaginations, that is his high up-end peak. And look, if you disagree with Blankers and you believe more out of Davis Mills, what is it? What is Davis Mills' peak? 713-780-ESPN.
Did you say what yours is?
I think it's right around there. I think it's Derek Carr. I don't disagree. Okay. I really don't. The point that I'm making here, though, is if it's Derek Carr, which is a win.
I hear you. Is it good enough?
Is a win for a third rounder. It's a great return on investment for a third round quarterback. People were saying he's had the worst practice they've ever seen out of a quarterback at training camp. And all of a sudden we're saying he can be Derek Carr. That's a success. But relative to what it means in the NFL, how serious of a contender are you with Derek Carr as your quarterback?
Here's what I'll say about that. Because I think the one thing to his advantage in saying what we've said, you've said, and what we've seen is there were two chapters to the Davis Mills book in year one. There was a really bad first chapter, including that bad practice. And then there was the ability to absorb and learn and develop himself so that the second chapter was much more positive, where he made stride, he showed strides, he did things, he made things happen. He showed you that there was hope and promise enough to get to the starting job this year, right? So you knew all those things going in. So those are encouraging things. But I think as you determine to answer that question and you determine what goes into it, it's not just about him. If he's a top 12 quarterback, then what does he have around him? We just got done saying and looking at David Carr's brother a little differently, because now you take Darren Waller and you take Jacobs and you take the guys they already had, and now you add the best receiver football.
Hunter Renfrow, you're referring to.
Hunter Renfrow and the best receiver in football.
Hunter Renfrow.
Davante Adams. And then you also add to the defense, which is not bad, right? And then you look at that and say, okay, now you need to expect more than a top 12 quarterback because you have more resources than a lot of the guys in the top 10. And because you are supposed to be someone that can lead this team, that's when you make that determination. So if you're the Texans, you say, hey, I got a top 12 quarterback. But what are you putting around him? And what are they going to, and where are they with him? Because at a certain point, just like we said with Lovie Smith as the head coach, if we get to a point where there's all the weaponry around him that any quarterback and offensive coordinator could ever ask for, and he has leveled off and showed you this is all he can be. It's almost like Matt Schaub, right? Matt Schaub was good. He was never great.
Right.
So at a certain point, you pull the plug and say, I need great because of everybody else around him, and that's how that would help determine that.
I would say the Raiders have done a good job of putting things around Carr, right?
Look, this is where it's all on his shoulders. Yep. They've given him everything.
So they've given him everything. Yep. He's a top 12 quarterback, which you're telling me in the wildest of your imaginations, that is the best Davis Mills can be. So that is Davis Mills. This is Derek Carr. They've done a great job assembling a core around him. The Las Vegas Raiders have the 17th best odds to win the Super Bowl despite all of that. So I ask you the question, Houston, in your wildest imaginations, because I get tired of Davis Mills truthers saying, well, you guys are just bashing on Mills. He hasn't played a whole lot of football. Okay, well, you tell me. How good can Davis Mills be? Who can he be? Top five? Top ten? Tell me. 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to it on the other side. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we were discussing the how good can Davis Mills be? Because one thing that I'm tired of is hearing from the Mills Mafia and Davis Mills, well, you don't think anything of the guy. You think he sucks, you're an idiot, you're stupid, you're wrong, your takes are terrible, bad take boulevard, yeah. Okay, well, define it. Because that's one thing that I hate, is whenever you just have these arbitrary discussions and you don't define what good is. So if you're saying Davis Mills is going to be better than I think, or we think, or this city thinks, well, then what is it? Like, what is your opinion of what Davis Mills can be? Do you think he's going to be Tom Brady? Do you think he's going to be Joe Montana? Do you think he's going to be a top five quarterback, top 10? You tell me. If we're so wrong, define to me what Davis Mills, in your opinion, is his top end potential.
And take it a step further. If you're going to define him differently, tell me why. Tell me what sticks out to you that we are missing that says this guy is higher up and has more potential than we see. I'd be curious.
Yeah, I mean, that's talking about his skills and stuff like that, which, I mean, sure, yeah, you could throw that in there too. He's got some skills. I mean, there's some things that I like.
I just want to know if someone comes to you and says, what are you doing? You're selling him short. You're crapping all over Davis Mills. He could be a top 10 quarterback. What tells you he could?
Yeah.
I want to turn the question around just a little bit and ask you guys, what's the number of quarterback that he needs to be where you say, yeah, this is our guy?
I would say that he needs to be a top 10 quarterback. If I don't have a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, I am searching feverishly for a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. If he's not that, I need that.
I ask because, honestly, Derek Carr was the when you were asking Joel, like, dreaming, that was the name that came to my mind. But if Derek Carr is my quarterback, I'm certainly keeping an eye out for a guy I love.
Mm-hmm. And the Raiders have.
But I'm not committed to taking a quarterback just to give him a shot. I think, and I haven't done the math on this. I would love to go back and look at it. But I think the chances of hitting on a quarterback above, you know, to be better than Derek Carr are a lot lower than maybe, like, people treat them as. Like, it's not easy to just go and take a top 10 quarterback. If you're sitting just outside of the top 10, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think now you're talking more about, like, where you're picking in the draft, like, how many games you're winning.
If you told me Derek Carr was going to be my quarterback for the next 10 years, well, not now, but, you know, at 22, 23, whatever he was when he came out, I'd say okay. I'm okay with that.
You'd be okay with what? Two playoff appearances and a quarterback outside of the top 10?
That's where I think it's silly to put this stuff all on a quarterback. Like, you're right. Sean McVay made Matt Stafford better, but he went 12 years without winning one.
What is a quarterback that's just outside of the top 10 get you?
It gives you a quarterback you're capable of winning with.
This is one element we haven't factored in, which is what is the pulse of the rest of the league look like? If you're going up against teams in your own conference that are dominant, you can be the best version of you with your team. And it's like teams that had to play Michael Jordan to win a championship. There are certain times what the rest of the league has and does matters too. You could have a top 12 quarterback. You could have a team around you. You could win the division or you get to the playoffs, but you just realize you can't get to certain elevations because there's roadblocks that are massive in front of you.
How many championships has Aaron Rodgers won?
One.
How many has Russell Wilson won?
Two. Didn't he win two?
I think he won one. He went to two.
One? Yeah.
How many did Peyton Manning win while he was a viable quarterback?
Two.
One.
One with the Bears, one with the Broncos.
The one he won with the
he was obvious, a shell of he himself. Was,
but he, still viable. He was good enough to win a
Super
Bowl.
No, he was worse than Brock Osweiler.
They were talking about benching him for Brock Osweiler. They had an incredible defense.
The gap between how much you can win with Derek Carr and any of these guys is one Super Bowl. Can I propose the possibility
now, that's
that because fair, they
that's
haven't
not fair because no. it's just those guys. Now, you're kind of cherry picking though.
Yeah, like, he's not Tom Brady.
Well, sure, but how many Super Bowls is Pat Mahomes going to win when it's all said and
done? I don't know. He only has one so far.
Right, and he's also in his mid-20s.
Look, I think Mahomes is going to win another one or two, but I think he hasn't won a Super Bowl, so he won't win a Super Bowl. Or like that it's on him because of that, I think that's a ridiculous opinion.
And it's not only about the one Super Bowl. It's about, okay, let's look at a sustained level of winning for a long period of time. Derek Carr has not shown a sustained period of winning over a long period of time. I would argue that any quarterback that's not a top 10 quarterback isn't going to sustain a level of winning over a period of time. You might have their one, oh my goodness, year like Joe Flacco, where they have a terrific team around them, or you're going to be looking at a bunch of, you know, 8-9 finishes where you're just outside of the playoffs. Maybe you get hot one year, go 10-7, and you're a conference semifinal, but what are you really accomplishing here?
See, I think that depending on which side of the argument between you guys that you're on, you can bring up examples. And I believe that the Matt Schaub example is a really good example for looking at it and saying you were so desperate for so long to find any guy, any resemblance of a franchise quarterback, that you got a guy that was pretty damn good. He made the Pro Bowl multiple years. He had some big seasons. But as you look back on it, you say, the rest of my roster was good enough that if we had somebody else, the question should be asked, could we have gone further? And before the break, what I was going to say, the same thing would be like the Minnesota Vikings now. The Minnesota Vikings now look back and say, hey, we were willing to roll with Kirk Cousins for a little while. But you know what it got us? It got us a roster that every other position group looked like it was Super Bowl caliber with Dalvin Cook, with Diggs or Jefferson now, but Diggs and Thielen and the defense that they had and all the different weapons and talent they had across the board on both sides of the football. And then you said, you know what? Cousins is going to get better because of what we have around him. We're going to keep rolling with him.
Yep.
Now when you talk to Viking fans, they're like, why didn't we upgrade and get someone better while we still had a roster that was Super Bowl? Because now the window's shut and it's closed off and it's passed us by.
They're hoping that an offensive-minded head coach can come in there and like rejuvenate it.
And now
like,
those guys aren't at their peak anymore.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it's a good example. And like, Brandon, you're talking about just the Super Bowls, right? So, like, that's a very – I think it's an arbitrary number. Like, one team in the NFL wins a Super Bowl every year, whereas there's 5, 7, 8 Super Bowl contenders in a single year. If you're looking at Super Bowl contenders this season, most, if not all, of those teams that are Super Bowl contenders have a guy at quarterback where that quarterback is going to make you a Super Bowl contender year in, year out.
See, that number's a lot lower than 10. If you want that guy, that number's like 5 or 6.
Okay, 5 or 6. Give me that quarterback. If you're Tom Brady, you're a Super Bowl contender. If you're Pat Mahomes, you're a Super Bowl contender. If you're Josh Allen, you're a Super Bowl contender. Aaron Rodgers. I think there's a couple more that I'm probably not naming off the top of my head.
I think
anybody
that's
else?
About it.
I mean, can Kyler Murray play into that? Maybe.
Sure. Yeah,
Lamar Jackson. People would say Lamar Jackson's in that conversation. I wouldn't say that Lamar Jackson's in that conversation. Some people would say Deshaun's in that conversation. Some people would say Russell Wilson's in that conversation. Those guys are like top 10 level quarterbacks that if you have them, you think you have a fighting chance to win a Super Bowl. If you have Kirk Cousins or Derek Carr, you need, oh my goodness, roster around me to have a sniff at the title for probably a 2 or 3 year window.
Now, the one thing that I would say in Carr's defense is last year was just such an anomaly of disaster that he actually waded through enough to just getting to the playoffs and doing what they were able to do with all the distractions around them was a major accomplishment. But now the pressure is even greater and everything's more magnified because you added the best receiver in football, because you added a Chandler Jones on defense to give you more weaponry on both sides of the football to say you're in go-for-it mode now, and the only way that this thing can get screwed up is if you screw it up because you've got everything you need and we see everything we need to think that even if the prognosticators at the start of the season don't have us picked as a Super Bowl favorite, there's no reason why we shouldn't be competing to go further than we did last year by a long shot.
Do you think they will?
I don't think so.
There you go. Like oh, they did all those things.
But I don't know that it's going to be Carr's fault.
No, I don't. But that tells you that kind of proves the point.
But it also
like,
goes back
Carr's
to what I was
fault,
saying.
But it's who Carr is.
Their division alone is so loaded, and then when you look at you know what they have to go up against and who they have to get through just to do those kind of things to get to the Super Bowl and or win it,
right?
I think that the obstacles are not just what's in their own dressing room and how on their schedule. The obstacles also become, like I said, every other team in the AFC and in the league that's going to be that are maybe at a different level than even you're at.
AFC West is tough.
It's a gauntlet, man.
It is tough.
It's the toughest division in the NFL.
Pat Mahomes is picked to third best odds to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
Derek Carr is 17th, despite having all those pieces they've added around
him. Jeremy, what you want is the top 4 to 5 guy. And sure. That's fine. That's okay.
That's probably, I think, 6 or 7, but whatever. Yeah. I don't want to pick, you know,
in regards
here.
To the odds, though, here's the thing you have to take into consideration. We haven't seen anything about how this group is going to perform.
I've seen Mahomes. I've seen Carr.
We haven't seen this version of Carr with these weapons and how it's going to work. It could work, and it could click immediately, and then those odds can change. We see them fluctuate all the time. But because we've seen Mahomes, we know what he can do. You said it. He's won Super Bowls. Even without Tyreek Hill, we know what he and Andy Reid are capable of doing with the team that they have. We don't know enough about what this Raiders team is going to be like coming off what they went through, adding the guys that they added, and then seeing how they all kind of gel together and how long it takes. If they come out of the gates just busting everybody, it can change in a heartbeat, but it's all going to be on his shoulders. That's why I think he's rated so low in terms of Super Bowl odds as opposed to Mahomes.
No, see, I don't disagree with anything that you're saying there, but there's a lot of ifs there that you're not asking about the Chiefs. And why are you not
because
asking that
them.
About the Chiefs? That's right. Right.
But you haven't seen Derek Carr with this version of the Raiders with everybody that he's going to have to know if he can handle it or not. If he does, then he could elevate himself into that discussion.
I agree, but it's a lot of ifs because
sure.
You have a quarterback that's 12th. And I'm telling you, that's not a life that I want to live in the NFL. Top 5 Super Bowl odds: Buffalo Bills, Josh Allen, Tampa Bay Bucks, Tom Brady, Kansas City Chiefs, Pat Mahomes, Los Angeles Rams, Matt Stafford / Sean McVay, Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers. You want a life of being a top 6 quarterback in the NFL, or do you want to live with a top 12 best case scenario out of Davis Mills? What is the best that Davis Mills can be? Is it good enough? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. If I had a life of where I'm a team that has a quarterback that's 12th in the NFL, and I know that I can't be a real Super Bowl contender, I would drink, and I would drink a lot. And whenever I am drinking, and I'm drinking a lot, it's going to be Gentle Ben's Vodka and Gin. You know that. Vodka, gin, bourbon, all part of the rotation for me. Local Texas brand, Gentle Ben Spirits. They do it better, and they do it better than anyone else. They're a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits using their state-of-the-art, innovative Posado craft technology. It's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand, and you're going to taste the huge difference that I did. He had me out to the tasting room in Alvin. Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, did. And ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is smooth, it is clean, and eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs, also online at gentleben.com. Also, if you're in the Beaumont area, head over to Deb's Liquor. They carry the Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin, and over at Broadway Liquor in Pearland. One other thing, Gentle Ben's looking for some brand ambassadors. So if you or anyone you know is interested in being a brand ambassador for Gentle Ben, check them out at the website gentleben.com. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What is Davis Mills? Like, I'm sick and tired of hearing the pushback of Davis. Oh, he's way better than what you're saying. He's going to be so much better than what you're describing him as. Okay, well, tell me, what's the high-end potential for Davis Mills? Because The Athletic put together this, they had anonymous scouts, general managers, coaches, whatever. They found anybody that they could that's in the industry that defines certain quarterbacks. They list Davis Mills, 27th best quarterback in the NFL, whatever. They broke him down into tiers, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, tier 4, whatever. Here are some of those anonymous quotes. Because, like, everybody tells us, not everybody, I should hesitate to say everybody. Everybody that's part of the Mills Mafia, the hashtag, we love Mills, whatever. I don't even know who they are. But I want to challenge them to tell me how good Davis Mills can be. Because the upside that I see from Davis Mills is probably lower than most people. You and your wildest imagination say Derek Carr, which I think wildest imaginations, that's a fair assessment for Davis Mills. The total high-end potential of what he could be, and my pushback would be, well, is that good enough? One defensive coordinator in the NFL. This is the best thing that I think was said about Davis Mills. I love this kid. This is a defensive coordinator in the NFL who faced Mills. I love this kid. I think he is so poised. He stands in the pocket. He is able to deliver the ball. I think he knows where to go with the ball. He throws a pretty ball. He throws a catchable ball. He sees the field. He's a 3. He's a three. He's a third-tier quarterback, according to a defensive coordinator who loves him. What are you winning as a three?
Well, again, it depends on what's around you. I think that if you set up your team to be the pass-happy, open offense that has been so popular in the NFL and you expect Davis Mills to do that, then you're going to fail miserably at getting to your ultimate goals. If you have a team that's stacked on defense that has a stud running back and a good offensive line and you can run the football to move the football and get points and you don't need him to be the kind of tier one, tier two quarterback, then I think that you know your chances are better to have long-term success and also do some of the things you want to do. But that's why I said a lot of it goes – you can say all you want about the quarterback himself and the traits and what you see and what they do, and then it gets down to who's around you and then also who you're going through. But as it relates to who's around you, if your team is, like I said, defensive, has a strong defense and is a run-minded football team, then Davis Mills can be just fine. But if you're looking to open it up and take advantage of your offensive weapons and do the things that seem to be prevalent in the NFL today, it's a different story.
Right. Like, just fine, though. Like, mm-hmm. Do you want a quarterback who's just fine? Like, I get that, like, he needs to play this year. Like, people are texting, give him this year. No one's saying not to give him
right,
this year.
Right, he gets this year.
Yeah, Davis Mills. I'm excited to see Davis Mills in 2022. And if I'm perfectly honest with you, I hope he proves me wrong. I hope he makes me look like an idiot. I hope that I have to eat crow with a little bit of hot sauce that picas a little bit about Davis Mills. I really do hope that. But I'm not going to sit here and lie to you behind a microphone to pander to the popular opinion of the city. Here's another quote from a personnel director in the NFL that likes Davis Mills, really like his composure. He makes plays in the passing game, doesn't have the best arm, but is an adequate passer. He reminds me of a better Andy Dalton. This is a compliment. A slightly better Andy Dalton? What are we doing?
Well, let me ask you a question. In retrospect, when you look at Matt Schaub, what was he?
I think Matt Schaub was slightly better than Andy Dalton, best case scenario.
But he wasn't a top 10.
No. Okay, fine. Like, say that a better Andy Dalton is Matt Schaub. Okay, like, cool. I'll concede that. Davis Mills, best case scenario, is that guy. Cool.
Right. I think
you get smashed at Gillette Stadium wearing a Letterman jacket?
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. I think that it depends. It also depends on where you play and who you play for, because certain teams, and I'm not even going to throw Detroit in there, but I'm going to say that there are certain teams and small and mid-market teams that if they can just say that they've been a perennial playoff team, that means the world to them. Mm-hmm. And then it's easier to swallow that they don't have Super Bowl championships, but they've been successful.
If you're a Bill O'Brien Texan coach team, right?
He won division titles. In a lot of ways, but then people started clamoring for more.
AFC South champion,
that's when you start scrutinizing, was Schaub good enough?
Right.
Coached well enough? You know, those kind of things.
I don't think this city wants division titles.
This is a football state. That's what I was going to say. It's different than those small mid-market situations where you're just trying to get there, be happy to win it. Look, you want a division that's even better. If you win a playoff game, that's fantastic. But that's a success. Well, I think that because they've been there and done that already too, the levels of expectations from a Houston fan base perspective are totally different than that. They expect you to get them to their first AFC championship mm-hmm. game. They expect you to make an appearance in the Super Bowl, and they expect you to be a reason why.
Look, I'm not going to say making the playoffs is mediocrity, because it's better than mediocrity, right? Like, it's a good team. The Texans have had some good teams. You mentioned they've never made the AFC championship game. It's been the hurdle, obviously. Like, maybe for the McNairs, going 10-7, winning a bad AFC South, getting to the playoffs being one and done, or you get to a second game in the divisional round and you lose, maybe that's good for the McNairs. Maybe that's good for Easterby. Where it's not good, though, for me, I know it's not good for the city, because I hear that every single day. People have resentment about the Houston Texans in this city, and that's not going to change until you take them seriously as a championship contender. So for this city, just getting to the playoffs is not good enough. I also don't think it's good enough for Nick Caserio. I don't think Nick Caserio is building this roster to go 10-7. Nick Caserio is building this roster to put himself and this team in a position to win a championship. He's got a long way to go. He's only, like, if this is a rebuild, which we all know it is, don't tell him I said that, the break, like, tearing it down, the demo project, all of that, like, he just tore down the building. That's easy. That's the easy thing to do. It's the build that is the challenging thing to do. He's got a long way to go. But I don't look at Nick Caserio as a general manager who has aspirations to go 10-7. I look at Nick Caserio as a general manager that has aspirations to win a championship, and I think it's the New England pedigree that has instilled that into him.
I think that any general manager that doesn't think that way is not right for the job that they're in then. Because I absolutely agree with you that he thinks, and his expectation is, that he is going to be part of the reason why, as he constructs this roster again, that this time it's going to be different. And this time with him at the helm, that they are going to do things that we have not seen in Houston. He also realizes where he's playing football and what it means to play good football in the state of Texas, in the city of Houston. And he also realizes, I think, more than we maybe give him credit for because he isn't from here, but some of the other things that factor in, like the shortcomings of the past, like the fact that the best quarterback that you can possibly say you had with this franchise was Matt Schaub, and if it wasn't, then it was Deshaun Watson. Both guys were, at the end of the day, were more negative than positive is the way they're looked at because of the way it ended, because of the way situations played out. So now that's going to stick in the craw more. That's why just getting there isn't good enough. That's why division championships aren't good enough as opposed to other rosters. Your past experiences and the remnants that are left behind that are going to stick with you mean something too.
And the best compliment that people that are in the industry are paying him, that like him, he's a better Andy Dalton. He's a tier three. I'm still begging the Mills Mafia, like, okay, you love Davis Mills. You tell us how wrong we are about the potential of Davis Mills.
We didn't call him Andy Dalton. We called him Derek Carr, damn it.
That's right. Like, what? Okay, tell me. Like, I want to hear from the Mills Mafia, and I want you to tell me what is his high-end potential. Because it's very easy to say, oh, you guys are idiots thinking that he's a bottom third NFL quarterback. Okay, well, let's challenge you. What can he be? What will he be? Here's one, 5369. He's a three at this point in his career, ! He will grow and get better, much like Brady did. If you remember, it was about year four that the light bulb went off for Tom. I think he won a Super Bowl in year two. And he won Super Bowls as a game manager.
Oh, my God.
So, but here's the thing with 5369. You did not define Davis Mills for me, unless you're saying that he's Tom Brady, which I don't think that you are. I don't want to put words in your mouth, 5369. So, like, here you go. Here's a Mills Mafia member. Pushing back against the resentment and the counterpoints for Davis Mills, but will not define who Davis Mills could be in their wildest dreams.
What do you see in him that can convince us, or what are we missing that you see that leads you to believe he is that guy, not the guy that we're portraying for you? Because again, I'm not. I all along I've been giving this guy every opportunity to succeed. And like you said, I want to see what he can do this year.
Yeah, he's got a runway.
I have never shut the ceiling on him or said he couldn't play in this league or say that he couldn't be anything better than a backup at best. But I'm also not going to lie to you and tell you this guy is potentially going to be a top five, top 10 quarterback because I don't see it. And I don't care how good he plays this year, I'm probably not going to feel it. But if he plays consistently over a couple years like that, then I would love to be wrong. But that's not the guy that I see right now. And I also know what this city and this organization expects out of the quarterback position, and they expect more than what I see in Davis Mills.
Dick Willie's one of the Davis Mills guys. He won't define him, though. They're saying, oh, Davis, you guys are idiots about your opinion on Davis Mills. Okay, what's he going to be? You tell me, what's he going to be?
And why?
4985, Dalton, three-time Pro Bowler, so that's better than Carr. You judge this kid like he's been in the league for years. No other quarterback on this kind of leash. Okay, so what do you think Davis Mills is going to be? 713-780-ESPN. Hashtag Mills Mafia. What is the potential for Davis Mills? You keep saying that your opinions are terrible. Dalton, three-time Pro Bowler. No quarterback on this kind of leash. He was better than all the rookie quarterbacks. What's Davis Mills going to be? Here's a couple of other NFL industry people.
By the way, I do hate this with the anonymous.
I love it.
I hate it.
That's the only way to get honest answers.
I think it's cowardly. I think it's cowardly when you can be that critical and not have your name on it.
If you're an NFL defensive coordinator, there's no way you're putting your name on it. That's the only way to get the quote.
I understand, but also at a certain point, then you also have to have a little bit more objectivity as the author of the article to say, if there's things that you can't put your name on and they're that outlandish of a statement, I've got to question where I put that in an article because there's guys that are basically saying Patrick Mahomes isn't a tier one quarterback. And they're not putting their name to it. And the only reason why they're saying he's not is because after the first progression, he plays playground football. Guess what? He plays playground football better than anybody. Most guys in the league play regular football.
Well, what did you say that was wrong, though? Because, I mean, that I don't think that's inaccurate.
He said he's not a tier one quarterback in this league because of it.
Okay. I mean, I don't disagree with the playground part of it. But
he's an MVP. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's one of the most feared quarterbacks in the league right now. Some people have already anointed him going to be the greatest quarterback of all time or one of the. You can't call him not a tier one quarterback when every year from fantasy football to regular football to everybody that critiques football that doesn't think that in the conversation of the three best quarterbacks in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes is one of them.
He says we love Mahomes because of his unorthodox throws, not because of his natural pocket presence. And when that disappears, that is when they lose games.
That's not the quote I'm talking about.
Yeah, it is. I don't think that is a one. I think it is a two. Nothing against the guy. I love the kid. But take away his first read, and what does he do? He runs, he scrambles, and he plays street ball.
That's the end of it, yeah. I was referring more to the second part of that. But, yeah, I don't think you can – no matter what he says, you're It's defamation to him if you tell him he's a, if you're telling me that I'm supposed to believe because you say he's a tier two quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Here is a couple of the ones on Mills that were negative. A former head coach. How about all the hype on Davis Mills? I just don't see it. Personnel director called Mills pretty interesting for his anticipation and accuracy, suggesting Mills is going to surprise a lot of people this season. Former GM said he's done some things, but doing good things when your team is no good, that is a whole different thing. He is still a four to me. I have yet to see a legitimate starter. Liked him coming out of the draft. If he turns into a Garoppolo, that wouldn't shock me. Congratulations. You have a quarterback that's outside of the top 20
Those guys should
in
put
the
their
NFL.
Name on it.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We do it every Wednesday at 2 in case we missed it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.